The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Is Joe Biden trying to make all of America like he is? Dysfunctional, messed up, on the verge of collapse? Bend over, America. The Haitians are being dispersed all over America. How is this possible when the Supreme Court affirmed Trump's Remain in America policy? Representative Jim Jordan joins me to talk about the border, General Milley, and January 6th. And finally, I'm going to continue my exploration of the debate between Luther and Zwingli on the issue of the Lord's Supper. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
I've been surveying the debris of the Biden administration over the last several months, and everything is going in the wrong direction. It's depressing. It is almost unbelievable. Even under Obama, you got the sense that, you know, this guy is moving glacially toward a big disaster, Obamacare. But you never got the sense that he was trying to undo things on all fronts, turn open all the faucets, let everything leak, bring the whole house into, you may say, a flooded condition. But this is Biden. And he's doing it with almost kind of arrogant indifference to public opinion. It's sort of like, who cares? I kind of think of Biden as this kind of crazy old man who's coming out of the basement. But he's reached a point in his life where everything hurts and nothing makes any sense. And quite honestly, he just doesn't care. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about the country. And so it's a little bit like, I'll do that. And so you got this sort of guy. And of course, we see this with, you know, we all have a crazy uncle like this somewhere, but our crazy uncle isn't running the country. Just make a little inventory here of this disaster, series of disasters that can collectively be put under the Biden label on foreign policy. One disaster on top of the other. The latest, of course, the capstone being Afghanistan. Not just the leaving of military equipment, the leaving of Americans behind. And again, the don't care attitude. It's been 5 days. Why are you bringing it up? But the kind of denouement of the whole thing, which is basically, we're going to go get him. I'm going to get him. Yeah, what do? You kill some innocent guy and 10 members of his family. And you still won't back down. Oh, the intelligence was reliable. Yeah. This is Biden. Climate change is now part of our foreign policy, if you can believe it. And of course, you've got this clownish John Kerry traipsing around the way, trying to convince the Chinese and the Indians we're in an existential situation. And the Chinese and the Indians have been really clear. They basically said, John Kerry, quite honestly, the quality of the air and the water in China is none of your business. We are a growing country and we're going to be using a lot of fuel. No matter what you say. Quite frankly, we don't care. The West used all the fuel it needed to become a fully developed country. Now it's trying to lecture the rest of us. Take a hike, buddy. And the Indians have exactly the same view. So this is really going nowhere. They're basically telling John Kerry, you can impose all kinds of constraints on yourself and we'll sit around and laugh at you while you do it. Let's move on to General Milley, insubordination at the highest levels of government. And I think Biden is too kind of whacked out and out of it to realize that what General Milley did to Trump, he can even do to Biden. Biden's really not all there. Should this guy be in charge of the nuclear codes? I'm in charge, guys. Let's take an oath. All of you, anything happens, go through me. So this is a real possibility. And Then we go on to the southern border. This has become a complete disaster. People are taking dumps under bridges, building shanties. I mean, if you're going to film a sequel to Slumdog Millionaire, no need to go to India anymore. It's just all you need to do is go to Del Rio and catch up with the 10,000 Haitians there. And you've got all the extras you need for the movie. Violent crime rates are rising. COVID is spreading, and while the government is trying to, you know, make all the Americans say, you gotta do this, you gotta do that, all the illegals are exempt. It's almost as if we have two tiers of citizens. The illegals are at the top, and the regular citizens are at the bottom, if you can believe it. This is Bidenism. The U.S. has increased its money supply, just in the last year by 25%. Now think about the inflationary impact on that. And what this really means is, it's not just that you pay more. It also means that by and large, people who lend money are going to anticipate inflation's going to go up 5%. I've got to kick the rates up 5%. Now imagine the United States, which by the way has this huge $29 trillion debt, which is by the way only serviceable because interest rates are low. So if interest rates start climbing, the government itself begins to find the annual intake of tax revenue drained by just paying the interest. So there's essentially what Biden is doing is it's almost like he's trying to, this is like the kind of guy who goes up to a house and tries to attack it from all different sides. He's sort of like, let's set fire over here. Let's make a leak over there. Let's take an axe to this part of it. And the building, of course, here is, in fact, the United States. And so as Americans watch this, I'm really interested to see how Americans react to this. Because if we're okay with all this, we're basically signing our own death warrant. By signing on to the Bidenization of America, we're sort of signing on to the destruction of America. Is your house stocked with MyPillow sheets? If not, you got to pay attention. My friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of your life. And he didn't stop by just creating the best pillow. Yeah, the company is MyPillow, but Mike also created the new Giza Dream bed sheets. And these look and feel great, which means an even better night's sleep for me, which is crucial for my busy schedule. Mike found the world's best cotton called Giza. It's ultra soft and breathable, but also extremely durable. Mike's Giza sheets come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. The first night you sleep on these sheets, that's it. You're never going to want to sleep on anything else. The Giza Dream Sheets come in a variety of sizes and colors, and Mike is making a special offer for my listeners, sale of the year, for a limited time, 50% off, as low as $49.99 on the sheets. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Dinesh. There, by the way, you'll find not just this offer, but deep discounts on all the MyPillow products. You got to fill your home with them the way Debbie and I have. Call 800-876-0227. That number again, 800-876-0227, or go to MyPillow.com. Don't forget to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. There's a huge disaster at the border, and both the Biden administration and the media are covering it up. Because they realize how crushing and damaging these images are of essentially third world style slums and huts being set up right in Texas. People, you know, urinating and defecating everywhere, and you've just got the kind of conditions that one would see in a favela in Brazil or a slum in Kolkata. It's a horrific scene. And so now they're pretending like, gee, you know, we've hired some planes. We're sending people back. We're doing what Mayorkas calls expedited removal. Now, they're not doing it. The simple truth of it, expedited removal doesn't mean what the word says. This is part of the kind of Orwellianism of our kind of illegal immigration vocabulary. Because what does expedited removal mean? Expedited removal means, you think it means that you have to go. But expedited removal means that you can actually stay once you ask for asylum. That's what it means. You're removed from the facility and allowed to stay. So the majority of these migrants, true, most of the single men who come are being sent back. But that is a small minority of the people who are coming. Why? because most of them on the other side are being counseled by immigration lawyers leftists, either South American leftists or American leftists, who tell them, listen, if you want to stay in America, first of all, you got to tear up your ID card from Mexico or Chile or Brazil. You've got to pretend like you're a refugee, you're in no man's land, you're in search of a place, you got to do that. So it's all a staged event. Number two, when you show up, you got to show up with some kids. And so think of the encouragement, the inducement this is going to give to trafficking. So on the one hand, you have the Supreme Court basically saying, affirming a decision out of Texas that says remain in Mexico. But the Biden administration is interpreting that to mean that only single men need to be sent back and everybody else can be loopholed, in effect, to stay. So Biden is, I won't say disregarding the Supreme Court, but using the latitude of administrative enforcement to basically say, the court is asking us to do this, and in a narrow sense, we're going to do that. Some of these guys are going to be sent back, but for the others, and in fact, the Biden administration has chartered with a company, it's called iAero Airways, colloquially known as ICE Air. ICE Air, why? Because when these guys are rounded up by ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Authority, they're basically put on airplanes, this private chartering aircrafts, and they're dispatched all over the country. I'm now quoting ICE Buffalo Field Office Director Tom Feely. Basically, all we're doing is catching them at the border, shipping them to the interior, releasing them and getting more, and then releasing them and getting more, and then releasing them. This is what's going on under Biden. And he says, if you oppose this policy, he says, leaders of local field offices, ICE guys, are forced to, quote, play the game, because if they don't, they get retaliation from headquarters higher up. No promotion for you, no bonuses for you. Listen, this is our policy. You better do what we say. So you've got this vicious attempt by the Biden administration to kind of flagrantly sidestep the immigration laws, the Supreme Court's rulings, and the will of the American people. You can't imagine, and they must know that Americans looking at this are like, we're not okay with this. But the Biden solution is, listen, we got a lot of allies in the media, and just as in Afghanistan, our strategy was, let's move on. What if we don't show Americans what's going on? What if they can't see? Now, true, you might have suddenly a Chilean guy shows up in your neighborhood. And this is actually happening, by the way, all over the country. What happens is these flights are normally at night. So the illegals are deposited into different parts of the country, generally when people can't see them. But then they suddenly just show up. And the Biden administration is hoping that people kind of won't mind. Well, it's only a handful of people, only a few families. So they're dispersing these people all over the country. It's all part of a despicable and nefarious scheme, really to change, I would say, the configuration of the American population, and they're doing it against our will. Let's remember that we are part of a social compact in which these changes can be made, but they have to be made, quote, with the consent of the governed. The Biden administration obviously doesn't believe that. They're giving us not what we want, but what we don't want, and they're daring us to do something about it. Did you know that there are 5 root causes of thinning hair? Nutrafol is the hair supplement that goes beyond genetics to target stress, hormones, nutrition, metabolism, and environmental factors that may be impacting your hair. Nutrafol is clinically shown to improve hair growth, thickness, and visible scalp coverage without compromise. Nutrafol is also trusted and recommended by more than 1,500 top doctors. Even if genetics is on your side, healthier hair growth takes time. You'll begin to experience thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair in 3 to 6 months. So get healthy hair and support our show by doing, go to Nutrafol.com and entering promo code Dinesh. You'll get $15 off your first month's subscription. This is their best offer anywhere. It's only available to my listeners for a limited time. Plus, by the way, free shipping on every order. $15 off. Now, this is how you spell it. Nutrafol. Go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code Dinesh. Biden's botched pullout from Afghanistan that gave us the Taliban, that brought the Taliban back to power, is probably the worst thing to happen to America since, I don't know, maybe Barack Obama Sr.'s botched pullout from Ann Durham that gave us Barack Obama.
Oh,
uh oh. Well, the Biden is really eager, as Debbie is, to move on to that, move on from that quickly. Well, the OMG. Well, Biden has told the UN that he's really eager to, quote, turn the page on Afghanistan. He wants to move on. And he goes on to say, amazingly, he goes, as we close this period of relentless war, we're opening up a new era of relentless democracy. Does this man even know what he's saying? We at least attempted democracy in Afghanistan. We had elections. Now, what's happening there now? The Taliban's taken over. How? By force. Do they plan to have elections? No. And the Taliban is now part of this larger emerging alliance with China. Do they have elections in China? No. Iran? Do they have elections in Iran? No. So we're seeing, you know, we're seeing the emergence of a rival system of government to democracy. It's a certain kind of ideological autocracy. In the Chinese case, secular. In the Iranian and Afghan case, it is Islamic. But in both cases, the autocrats are kind of coming together. And so this idea that we're having, quote, relentless democracy, what does that even mean? Now, it seems like the three wise men who came to the manger bearing gifts, the Afghan refugees coming to America are also bearing gifts, but they are not gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They are, in fact, malaria, measles, and tuberculosis. Now, this is not according to me. This is according to the CDC. The CDC says that the Afghans are bringing in three diseases that have been largely eradicated from the United States and from the West. We're going to be seeing them courtesy of these Afghans. As of today, the CDC is aware of public health departments of at least 16 cases of measles among the evacuees. And so suddenly they now have to go into high gear. What do we do about this? How do we treat it? And this is not the end of it. I mean, a bunch of these people have COVID. And apparently, other than measles, tuberculosis, and malaria, there's a whole bunch of other things coming into America. I can't even pronounce some of these names. Shigellosis? Giardiasis? Have you heard of this, honey? Cryptosporidiosis, hepatitis A, rotavirus. I think we've heard of that one. And viral diarrheal diseases. Varicella, mumps, leishmaniasis. So this is a kind of cornucopia of disease. And it's probably going to be, along with the Afghans, dispersed all the way through the United States. So this is another gift, courtesy of Biden, because who has enabled all this? Who's orchestrating it? Who is, and I think that this is the right word, inflicting it on the American people? It is the cruel, callous, unfeeling dotard in the White House. Guys, if inflation is the problem, precious metals are the solution. Now, in their recent budget proposal, the White House Budget Office forecast inflation for this year at 2.1%. Now, the actual rate is over 5%. Inflation's here. It's coming faster than our government is prepared for. And their solution is to stick their heads in the sand. Well, don't stick your head in the sand. Hedge your savings against inflation by diversifying into gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. Now, if you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it today. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. Really happy to welcome to the podcast Congressman Jim Jordan. Jim is the U.S. Representative for Ohio's 4th Congressional District. He's a position he's had since 2007. He's also a ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. Jim, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it. Hey, let me start by asking you about the border, because I thought that we sort of had a win when the Supreme Court kind of did not intervene in the decision in Texas, basically restoring Trump's remain in Mexico policy. So how is it the case that when we have remain in Mexico, that you got all these immigrants from Haiti, but also other places that get to stay and are being dispersed through the country? How is the Biden administration getting away with that?
Well, they're just sending the wrong message. I mean, so much of this is about the message sent from the Oval Office, the message sent from the White House. When you tell the whole world, we're really not going to follow, even though they have this court decision, we're not going to keep the remain in Mexico policy in place. We're not going to build the wall. We're not going to deport anyone. When you send that message, and that's in fact what you're doing, people come. And obviously we're seeing it. And frankly, Dinesh, I don't know how any rational person can reach any other conclusion than this is intentional. This is deliberate because I've been saying this in every interview I've been doing. March was the highest month on record for illegal crossings until the month of April. April was the highest month until May. May was the highest month until June. June was the highest month until July when we had 212,000 illegal encounters on the southern border. We now have what Secretary Clinton campaigned on in 2016. We have a borderless hemisphere. And for Mayorkas to say the border's secure when we see with our own eyes what's going on, Americans don't appreciate it. And it's why you see so much frustration from the American people about this issue and, frankly, a host of others.
I mean, we live in a society where we have a government that is supposedly responsive to the people. The Biden people in the back of their minds must know that the ordinary American is not okay with this. Why do you think they're pushing ahead with it almost with like brazen indifference? Is it that they think, listen, over 2 years, we're going to get 5 million people in here. It's going to tip the electoral balance. Who cares what the American people think? We'll have us, how are they thinking about it when they know that people see all these images and can't be comfortable with what they're seeing?
Yeah, they're not comfortable. That's evident in the approval ratings that are so low now for President Biden. I don't know if that's the reason. It very well could be, because I don't know that there's any more logical explanation for why they do what they do. But I also think, frankly, part of it's probably just, we can't do what Trump did, even though President Trump's policies worked. Think about it. We went from a secure border to chaos in less than 9 months. We went from peace in the Middle East to rockets being fired on Israel in less than 9 months. We went from energy independence to the President of the United States begging OPEC to increase production in less than 9 months. Everything they've touched has been terrible. So part of it, I think, though, on the border is just we can't do what Trump did, even though what Trump did worked. That is a bad position to take for any administration, but that seems to be what the Biden administration is doing.
Well, except in one area, and that's Afghanistan. Because remember, when the Afghan disaster unfolded with Americans left behind, with all this equipment left behind, what does Biden say? I'm just doing what Trump was going to do. So that's the one case where he kind of embraced the Trump's agenda as if he was sort of locked into it, even though, of course, the withdrawal plan was entirely Biden's own. Let's turn to Afghanistan for a second. What do you make? Is that something that they're going to be able to move on from? Will the American people forget about it? Or do you think that's something that's going to come and haunt them in the midterms?
No, I think all of this stuff is going to be on Americans' mind for the midterm election. I don't think that they're going to try, of course, to move on from it. But when you have 13 service members give their lives for our country, when you have Americans left behind, allies left behind, $90 billion of equipment and weapons left behind, a president who kills 10 innocent people with a drone strike, and a Joint Chiefs of Staff, in a book, if you can believe what Bob Woodward says, made a statement to his Chinese counterpart that if he made that statement, it is as wrong can be. If that's true. So when you have all that, I don't think Americans are going to forget the foreign policy concerns that they have with the Biden administration, and in particular, what happened in Afghanistan.
You know, I mentioned this earlier on the podcast, but I was watching TV and watching Woodward talking to Colbert. And to my amazement, Woodward goes, you know, Milley did the right thing. Milley was the one guy who showed courage under the situation. I'm thinking to myself, in what universe is it okay for the head of the Joint Chief of Staff to usurp the power of the president, even for 1 minute, or to call up our leading adversary and say, guys, I'll tip you off if there's any attack coming? I mean, how is it possible for a rational mind to justify that?
This is where the left is. I mean, the left, the left actually thinks the bureaucrats are more important than the people who put their names on the ballot. And that's not what our Constitution says. I mean, when was General Milley's name ever on a ballot? When was Lois Lerner's name on a ballot? When did she run for office? And remember what she did to people through the IRS when she targeted people like you and I, conservatives around the country? When was Dr. Fauci's name ever on a ballot? When did he ever have to go answer to we the people in an election? That is not how our system works, but that's what the left has embraced. Oh, the bureaucrats, the state, the permanent state, the permanent deep state, the permanent swamp, they're the ones should be making decisions because they're the, quote, experts. That is not how it's supposed to work, but that's what the left believes, and that's why they say these kind of things. You and I know that's not how this great country is supposed to work under our Constitution. Let's hope we can get to the bottom of it and change this kind of thing.
When we come back, I want to ask Congressman Jim Jordan about the infrastructure bill and what its fate is going to be. We'll be right back. If you're thinking of replacing your carpets due to pet stains and odors, you got to try Genesis 950. By the way, this is a company that's been sponsoring this podcast from the very beginning. The reviews for it are amazing. This is one product that actually works with water. It breaks down the bonds of stains and odors so they're gone for good. Its antibacterial component removes pet odors from carpet and padding. It can be used in a carpet cleaning machine, and it's green, so it's safe for your family and pets. Genesis 950 is made in America. 1 gallon of industrial strength Genesis 950 makes up to 7 gallons of cleaner. But Genesis 950 is also great for bathrooms, floors, upholstery, and grease stains. Debbie uses it to clean everything. And when I got one of our white chairs kind of dirty, Debbie sprayed Genesis 950, and I was amazed it took care of it. Genesis 950 has great customer service. Order 1 gallon direct at genesis950.com. You'll get a free spray bottle, free shipping, and a $10 coupon using the code Dinesh. That's genesis950.com. Coupon only available for 1 gallon purchase. Genesis 950, it's much cheaper than replacing your carpets or your furniture. I'm back with Congressman Jim Jordan, and I want to talk about the infrastructure bill. But before I do, we were talking for a second in the break about the Durham indictment of Sussman. And you were saying, Jim, that you think it's a bigger deal than people are making it out to be. On the surface, it appears the indictment is narrow, right? Sussman is accused of lying to the FBI, one felony count of lying. But I think when you read the indictment, you actually begin to see that there's a lot more ice below the surface of the iceberg.
Yeah, I agree. And I think first of all, it's important to understand this is not your normal false statement indictment. False statement to the FBI. So this wasn't a false statement given to Durham and his investigative team in the course of their investigation. This is the false statement that helped launch the whole crossfire hurricane probe into President Trump. This is a false statement made clear back in 2016, not from Zussman to Durham's investigators, but from Zussman to the FBI. Not just anyone at the FBI either, Dinesh, to Jim Baker, the chief counsel at the FBI. Zussman passed him information. He passed it on to Strzok and Page and the investigators and helped launch and foment this crazy investigation into President Trump. So Durham is going right back to the source, right back to the start when this all began in 2016. I think that is a good sign. And then when you look at the 27-page indictment, the first sentence talks about these media stories came out the week before the 2016 presidential election. So Durham is pointing to how this game was played. Information is fed from Clinton to the FBI, Clinton's campaign, through people to the FBI, with the whole purpose being to get the media to write about it so they can use it in a campaign, and it hurts President Trump's chances of winning the election. Durham is on to the key thing that happened here. We'll see where it plays out and goes from this point on.
Yeah, where do you think it's going to play out? Because if I were Durham, I'd say to myself, all right, I got this guy Sussman, but it probably wasn't Sussman's idea to execute this scheme, a scheme that, as you say, involves the deep state. It involves cooperative or complicit members of the media. This probably came from someone pretty high up in the Hillary campaign. And so shouldn't I press Sussman to see how high this goes? Because it could very well be that the head of the snake is Hillary herself.
Well, yeah, because remember, it's the Clinton campaign, Perkins Coie Law Firm, which is where Zussman was. Then it's Fusion GPS. And then it's, oh, we're going to go hire the folks to put together the dossier and get that information to the FBI. And remember, this Jim Baker, who received information from Zussman, also is the same Jim Baker, chief counsel at the FBI, who received information from David Korn relative to the dossier. So, yeah, this is all part of the scheme. I think that's what Zussman points out. Very first sentence of his indictment. That's what he's alluding to. We'll see how it plays out. I think it's interesting that the chief counsel of the FBI is getting information from political people and passing it on to investigators. That probably doesn't happen all that often, but it happened here not once, but twice. So we'll see if there's anything happened to Jim Baker or any of these other folks. We wish this had happened sooner. We wish this thing was moving quicker, but at least we have this now and we'll see where it goes.
I mean, it's kind of ironic, isn't it, that the Hillary team planned this to drop right before the election. Now, Durham, you'd have to say for his own part, was very cautious not to make this indictment before the 2020 election. It's almost as if he decided, let me wait, let me keep this above politics. So isn't this kind of the difference between Republicans and Democrats? They basically, you know, sort of indict first and investigate later. Look at what they're doing, for example, with these January 6th guys, whereas our side always wants to like cross every T, dot every I.
Well, it's even worse, Dinesh. Remember the big story a year ago, this time a year ago, right before the 2020 presidential election, was the Hunter Biden story. And what did the press do? What did the Justice Department do? They did nothing. Oh, no, we're not going to talk. That's misinformation. Now we find out that everything you and I were saying and others were saying last fall, it's true. We had the eyewitness, Tony Bobulinski. We had actual emails. The FBI was, in fact, investigating this situation. But no, we couldn't talk about that before that election. But meanwhile, you go back to 2016, you had the FBI participating in this story that come out before the 2016 election. So, again, you're exactly right. There's always a double standard.
Let me ask you about the infrastructure bill, because it seems to me that there is a kind of political opportunity here, because the progressives are saying that if we don't get the $3.5 trillion, we're going to vote even against the smaller bill. We're going to knock out the $1.5 trillion. And so you got the progressive left on the one hand, which I think is a powerful base of the Democratic Party. You've got Manchin and Sinema sort of on the other side. Now, in a weird way, where's this, A, where's this going to come out? And B, is there an opportunity for the Republicans to sort of recognize that there's a window of opportunity here? And maybe it's possible that we end up spiking both bills.
Yeah, well, that's the goal. And the answer to your first question, where does this come out? Nobody knows. Democrats don't know. They can't get the votes for anything. Everything they have done so far in the 9 months where they've had complete control of the federal government has been a disaster. They can't get votes for either the 1.2 or the 3.5. They're both bad. It's $4.7 trillion of spending. It's unprecedented. So let's hope it all fails and that we can not raise taxes on family. I told a group the other day, the Democrats' economic plan. I mean, think about this. The Democrats' economic plan is lock down your economy, spend like crazy, pay people not to work. And then for everyone who has been working, we're going to raise your taxes. That's their plan. So let's hope it doesn't work. Let's hope this spending doesn't happen and the tax increases that are contained in these bills. Let's certainly hope they don't happen either.
Looking forward to next year, I mean, as you say, we've had uninterrupted disasters one after the other now for almost 9 months with Biden. And the Biden people appear to be taking the view, let's just do everything we possibly can. What we have a narrow control right now. Who cares about the midterms? We'll deal with it then. Do you sense a kind of building rage on the part of the American people that will express itself next year?
Definitely. I see it all across the 4th District of Ohio, all across our great state. I travel a lot to help colleagues. I see it everywhere we go. The Americans are, they're not only mad, they're nervous. I had a lady almost come to tears because she says, look at what they're doing to our country. And I think so many people are also focused on the fundamentals. Look what they're doing to the First Amendment. I mean, look, every single liberty we enjoy under the First Amendment, your right to practice your faith, your right to assemble, your right to petition your government, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, every single one has been assaulted over the last year. So Americans get it. I think they're going to come out in a strong way next year. We're less than now, 13 and a half months till the next election. I think it's going to be a big day for Republicans, which is exactly what we need, because then we can really put a check on, I think, what they're trying to do and then build for the 2024 presidential race.
Jim Jordan, thanks very much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
You bet, Dinesh. Good to be with you.
Just a few weeks ago, one of America's leading nonprofit law firms, First Liberty Institute, asked patriots like you to sign their letter to help stop President Biden's radical scheme to pack the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, since then, 250,000 people have signed on, with tens of thousands joining their coalition. every day. Franklin Graham, former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, Dr. James Dobson, the Family Policy Alliance, the Heritage Foundation, they're all on board. But we only have until September 29 to include your name before this goes into the Biden Commission. Look, if we don't stop the radical left from installing four more justices so that they can rig the system in their favor, it will end the rule of law as we know it in America. Please sign your name now. Debbie and I both have. Go to Supreme Coup. That's C-O-U-P. Go to supremecoup.com to sign First Liberty's letter. Once again, that's supremecoup.com. And may God bless America. I mentioned yesterday how the media played a critical role in enabling the Hillary campaign to get away with pinning this Russia collusion hoax on Trump. The campaign couldn't have done it by itself. They couldn't even have done it with the FBI and the deep state. They needed the media. And a critical figure in this lie is Franklin Foer, the writer for, at the time, for Slate magazine, who wrote a big article, "Was a Trump Server Communicating with Russia?" Now, this article is presented as an independent piece of journalism, but we find out from the Durham indictment of Sussman, when we read it, we find on page 22, that Franklin Foer was basically a kind of tool of this campaign strike. They talk about, for example, an investigative firm contacting Foer and basically saying, "What's up with the article? Where's your article?" And Franklin Foer basically says, he sends them the article. He goes, "Here's the first 2,500 words." So he acts like he's putting out an independent article, but he's showing his sources the article before it even appears. Now, the article itself is written with such artistry that you've got to realize you're dealing here not with a dupe, but with a co-conspirator, somebody who artfully makes it look like, and you just have to read this to believe it. I'm just going to read a few sentences because they convey the flavor of how diabolically deceitful these people are. And they're deceitful because they masquerade as honest. In fact, he starts talking about bad actors on the internet. Of course, he's the worst actor of them all, Franklin Foer is. But he goes, "They're bad actors on the internet, and they put out a lot of false information." He goes, "But," and I'm quoting him, "a small, tightly knit community of computer scientists who pursue such work, some at cybersecurity firms, some at academia," so he's implying that these are his sources, "spurred by a sense of shared idealism, considers itself the benevolent posse of the internet." So basically the idea of Franklin Foer is following these academics. Now in reality, he's of course being fed information by a left-wing Democratic lawyer paid by the Clinton campaign. He's like, "Here," but he's acting like, no, he's in league with academia. And then he goes, "One of these scientists who can't release his name, was going through a kind of needle in a haystack operation." And then he goes, "I have an outlier here that connects to Russia in a really strange way." So this is a sort of detective story that he's setting up here. And then he says that basically, to the guy's surprise, he found out that this server connects the Trump Organization with Alpha Bank, a Russian bank. And he goes, "These guys weren't out to get Trump. They weren't sort of planning any kind of political hit. In fact," he says, they're trying to protect both campaigns from malware, from hacking. So these are kind of bipartisan good guys who are trying to, the researcher goes, "I'm seeing a preponderance of the evidence, but not a smoking gun." So he's trying to make them look like they're such rigorous sleuths that while they're reluctant to believe it, they see these connections between the Trump server and Alpha Bank, but they're going to move very cautiously because, after all, it's only the facts, ma'am. We don't have any kind of agenda here. And so what you read as you get the article, no mention, by the way, of Sussman, no mention of the Clinton campaign, no mention of you being handed this material as if you're like one of these, like heralds of the king in the old days. "Go read this proclamation in the town square." Yes, sir. I'm going to do it. And then you go out there and you go, "My own detective work has led me to believe that the king is going to do, this is the modern equivalent of that. And so you've got this little nerd unimportant in his own right, but important only because he's willing to be a complete shill, a complete propagandist, and he's kind of clever at the masquerade. Of course, the masquerade is only for people who want to believe it. But there are plenty of people who want to believe it. And so what you have here, and Durham lays all this out. So it's sort of like Durham is giving you the tip of the iceberg. I'm going to indict this one guy, Sussman. But hey, if you look under the iceberg, there are all kinds of little roaches and rats. You know, there's four running around, and there's Rachel Maddow running around, and Natasha Bertrand running around. So all these despicable characters are all part of this scheme that ultimately traces itself to that horrible woman, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Can you ever have too many towels? Well, actually, no, you can't. We just can't stop ordering MyPillow towels. We've replaced all our towels with MyPillow towels, and now Mike Lindell has a special that we can't pass up, so we're going crazy and ordering more. There's no such thing as too many towels. Towels just don't seem to dry you anymore, the normal ones. They feel soft and lotiony in the store, but you take them home and they don't absorb. Why not? Because most towel companies typically import the product and then they add softeners that make the towels feel good, but they don't dry you very well. Mike Lindell has solved this problem. He created the best towel company right here in the USA. MyPillow has proprietary technology to create towels that not only feel soft, but actually absorb and leave you feeling fresh and dry. MyPillow towels come with the MyPillow 60-day money-back guarantee. And for a limited time, Mike Lindell's offering a ridiculously good deal on a 6-piece towel set, which includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths, all made with USA cotton, soft yet absorbent, regularly $109.99, now $39.99. What a deal. Go to 800-876-0227 or go to MyPillow.com to get the discounts. You got to use promo code Dinesh. I want to talk about Bob Woodward and General Milley. So I'm watching TV, and what do I see? I see Woodward, and he's there with Stephen Colbert. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Let's see what Woodward is the source for the 2 outrageous, treasonous, if true, acts that General Milley committed. Number one, the usurpation of power from Trump. I'm in charge here. Any decisions about nuclear weapons has got to go through me, and take insisting upon an oath on that matter from the other generals. Wow. And number two, tipping off our leading adversary, China. Hey, if an attack's going to come, I'm going to call you beforehand and let you know. Now, I was interested to see what is Woodward going to say about that. And amazingly, in a kind of remarkable pivot, here's Woodward. I'm going to quote him now. The one courageous person who did something was General Milley. I'm thinking to myself, did I just hear that right? Is Bob Woodward, is Trump derangement syndrome reached such a point that Bob Woodward thinks that, you know, Trump is so out of control that it's really okay for Milley to have done these things, that we're in a national emergency, guys? I think to myself, well, let's look at your book. What did Trump do? What crazy behavior did he exhibit that would warrant such action? And the answer is, there is none. You have Trump raving and ranting. He's yelling at Kellyanne Conway about something, and he tells Mike friend Pence, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. Let's just even say all these things are true, and most of them are attributed to unnamed sources. But nevertheless, let's say they're true. Is that any excuse for taking over the government? Let's just say Biden went on a rampage. I don't like this. Okay, well, you know what? Let's take away the nuclear football. Let's give it to General Milley. Let's call up all our leading adversaries in Iran and China. Hey, guys, listen, nothing's going to happen. We're going to tip you off in advance. I can't believe Bob Woodward would be okay with that. So I think, you know, even if you put the best spin on Milley's actions, let's just put it their way. If I was Milley, I would say, well, listen, you know, I wasn't trying to take over the government. I was just trying to I found that the horse was really bouncing around. So I wanted to just hold the reins for a little bit, for a short period of time. I didn't see it as usurpation. Or number two, it seemed like American politics was kind of unstable. I wanted to just let the Chinese know, listen, we're not kind of going nuts over here. I'm merely reassuring China in order to promote, let's just say, world stability. That's the best case I can think of for Milley. But even under that scenario, what Milley did is wrong. I mean, is flatly wrong. Why? Because he's not authorized to do any of it. The defense secretary didn't authorize him. Then the defense secretary is his superior. Trump clearly didn't authorize him. And most importantly, the Constitution doesn't authorize him. The Constitution does not give the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, A, the authority to place himself at the head of the executive branch, not even for 1 second. And B, to call up or to be in direct contact with America's adversaries to let them in on not only what's happening, but what he intends to do if something might happen in the future. So Trump has and had every legal authority to order an attack on China. He doesn't even have to give Milley the reason for it. As long as it's a legal order, Milley's job is quite simply to carry it out. And so Milley's actions, I think, even on the best construction, are outrageous, are insubordinate, are deserving of not just resignation, but severe punishment. Apparently, these are facts lost on one clueless Bob Woodward. The doctrine of sola scriptura, only scripture, only the Bible, is one of the cornerstones of the Reformation. What I want to do today is talk about a debate within the Protestant community, within magisterial Protestantism, and a debate within sola scriptura over how to read the Bible. Because this is part of the problem. You have a Bible, it is authoritative, it is God's word, and obviously it deserves primacy. Because if God wrote a book, we should all find out what's in that book, and that book becomes theologically, morally authoritative. But the problem is that books are not self-interpreting. And that is true no less of the Constitution than it is of the Bible. So the Constitution is what it is, but we still have authorities. We have a whole process. We have courts and ultimately a Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court adjudicates disputes that might arise over the meaning of the Constitution. So how is that going to be done according to Luther if you don't trust in the Pope and you don't trust in the church councils? Who's going to be the adjudicator? And it turns out Luther's answer to that question was sort of me. And we see this because when other people came up with other interpretations, and we're not talking about Catholic interpretations, we're talking about Protestant interpretations emerging, in this case, from the second most important figure in the Reformation, Huldrych Zwingli, then Luther becomes absolutely furious, and as we'll see, essentially denounces Zwingli as not even a Christian. So let's take a look at this a little more closely. And its importance is not just historical. Its importance is it helps us just try to see why even now, why is it the case if you look around America? Why do we have so many different churches, so many different sects? How did we splinter? How did Christianity break not into two, but into like 40? How did that happen? And we see today that this is not just a clash between Catholicism and Protestantism, but within Protestantism itself. Now, Zwingli started out as a kind of admirer of Erasmus, and he started out as a humanist, and he started out as someone who believed in the centrality of Scripture, but he moved from that position to a little more radical view, which broke with Catholicism. Scripture is not only primary, you shouldn't just emphasize Scripture, you should base your teaching solely on Scripture. So right here we have a doctrine that Zwingli shares with Luther, namely sola scriptura. And Zwingli's interpretations of Scripture turn out to be different on certain key points than Luther's. Now, the Lutheran prince, Philip of Hesse, was very eager that the Lutheran camp and the Zwinglian camp unite or find common ground. Why? Because the Protestants were facing a threat. The threat was Charles V, the most powerful emperor in Europe at the time, Catholic. And Philip of Hesse was very eager to create not just a theological, but a kind of political and even a military alliance between the Lutherans in Germany and the Zwinglians in Switzerland so that Protestantism could be at its, have a strongest front against Charles V. And so Philip of Hesse calls something that is now known as the Marburg Colloquy, in which Luther and Lutheran theologians are invited, Zwingli and Zwinglian theologians are invited, and the ideas, let's see if we can come to some common agreement. And let's remember, it's in the interest of both sides to have an agreement. Why? Because united, they're much stronger against their external adversary. And so you have a three-day kind of hashing it out. And at the end of the 3 days, Luther and Zwingli agree on 14 out of 15 points. But on the 15th point, on the crucial point, on the meaning of Christ's presence in the Eucharist, they cannot and will not agree, and neither man is willing to compromise or relinquish his position. So you see right here how, even though it is politically makes sense for these groups to come together, two men can't come to terms on the meaning of a single, really two lines in Scripture. And so this military, this political alliance never takes place. And in fact, the two men leave essentially denouncing the other. Now, here's the line in Scripture, and it's a critical line, so I'm going to read it. This is very simple. While they were eating, Jesus took bread, spoke a blessing, and broke it, and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take this and eat it. This is my body. And then do this in memory of me." So you have two lines. This is my body, and do this in memory of me. And this is what the argument is all about. Now, Luther's position, which is actually fairly close to the Catholic position, but not identical with it, is that when Jesus says, "This is my body," and Luther was kind of, by and large, a literalist in the way he read the Bible. He realized the Bible as parables, but for the most part, he goes, when Jesus is saying something, he means it. So if Jesus says, "This is my body," what Jesus means is this, meaning this bread, is my body. It's not like my body. It doesn't symbolize my body. It is my body. That's what Jesus actually said. Zwingli says that's impossible. Zwingli says that what Jesus is saying when he says this is my body, what Jesus means is this signifies my body, meaning this is a symbol of my body. And when Jesus says do this in memory of me, according to Zwingli, every time we have the Eucharist, it is nothing more than a memorial, a reenactment, a let's remember when Jesus did this the first time, and that's what it is. So the is in the this is my body is what Zwingli termed a sort of signifier, a symbol. Now, this outraged Luther, and Luther goes, wait a minute, what kind of Bible reading do we have here? Is it the case that every time we come across the word is, we deposit the new term signifies? Let's take another phrase by Jesus. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Does this mean that Jesus is saying, I'm symbolic of the way, the truth, and the life? In other words, I'm a mere symbol. The way, the truth, and the life is something else, but I sort of am a stand-in for it. No, says Luther, Jesus is the way, the truth, of the life, and there's no other way to read it. Is means is. So this is very important stuff to these guys. They're not arguing about, this is not a semantic dispute in the narrow sense. For Luther, this is the core meaning of the Eucharist. And Zwingli says, well, how could it be that Jesus is in the Eucharist? Jesus is in heaven. In other words, once Jesus is, you have the death, the resurrection, Jesus is gone. He's up there. What do you mean when you say he's down here? That makes no sense. We can't understand it. And Luther goes, you can't understand it. Who cares? It's not important for you to understand it. Yeah, God became a man. Do you understand that? You can't understand that either. The point is that God can choose to do his thing his own way. And just because it is incomprehensible to you doesn't mean that we should not accept it as divine revelation on the basis of faith. Anyway, the unfortunate truth is that these two guys, Luther and Zwingli, storm off in a huff. Luther is the angrier of the two. He basically says that Zwingli is not even a Christian. As as I mentioned yesterday, when Zwingli was killed in battle, Luther basically goes, ha, 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 this is God kind of having a last laugh at this guy. So we see here, and the point I want to make is that when the sola scriptura is right as far as it goes, but how far does it go? What you have is people coming up with disputed interpretations. And in the end, what they do is they storm off and they start their own church. And this is a little bit of an insight and an explanation of how a single unified church that initially became two has now become many with no end in sight and no attempt, no successful attempt to reconstitute, to bring together, if you will, the church as the body of Christ.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.